this last week, and it was fascinating. We've been looking at stories, scriptural stories, and a couple of times when we were exploring this as a group, people came up and said, "Do you know, I've thought such and such from that story." And you think, yeah, you can get that from there. That's great. I've not thought that before. And that's important when we're reading Bible stories. And Ruth is a wonderful, consistent, whole story. But they're there for you to interact with. And it's fascinating. If you've visited in different countries and listened to different people talking about stories, they hear it in different ways. They spot different things. And when they spot it from their background, you think, oh yes, I would never have thought of that. And it's not that you say, this is the one thing that this story is teaching. You're saying, this is what this story says to me and to you. And when we look at it, we think, yeah, that's not... It's not what it's at. This is not the whole teaching of this passage. But it does say that. It's a little bit like if you've done speaking sometimes or teaching in a Sunday school or anything. Somebody comes up a bit later and says, you know when you said such and such? And you think, I've never said that at all. But what's happened is they've heard something that you've said and their mind, under God's guidance, has gone off over here. So they've associated it and they say, you said, you did say what I did not say. You see what I mean? And why it is so important when we're reading Bible stories for you to be interacting with it as you. Me at this age. Me as this young person, me as this old person, me as this person from Birmingham, me as this person from this country or that country, me as somebody who left school at 16, me as somebody who went on to higher education. All of those have got stuff to say, and we need to listen to each other and interact ourselves. So what you're going to get out of Ruth and the book of Ruth, share it, because other people might not have thought this. And we had a wonderful introduction. I heard it on the internet from Stuart last week to the whole of Ruth. And that's important in that Ruth is a complete story. So we're looking at chapter 2 today. And in a sense, we're kind of picking a window. And we've got to be careful, because you can really only see chapter 2 in the context of the whole book. You can't say, oh, this teaches this, this and this. But there are things that come out of it. I'm going to read it in a moment. And I want you to listen, maybe with your eyes shut, and think, what hits me about that? What's the thought that I have about that? And then later on you can share that. And I'm going to then be sharing some of the things that have come out of it for me, and some of suggestions, but that's not the whole of the story. You can read it. As I say, that's what's so good about the fact that there's so many stories in Scripture that you can relate to in different ways. And you have to ask the question, why did the writer want us to know that? Why did they say it in that way? How does that relate to other things? And it's fascinating the way in which the whole of Scripture approaches stories. It approaches them by asking questions. I've heard people say sometimes, I don't like that. It made me think such and such. And you think, did you ever think you were supposed to think such and such? And they feel a bit guilty. You know, how can I think that? It's the Bible. Duh. It's written in such a way to make, as in Judges we've talked about before, you're meant to be horrified. You don't feel guilty because you feel the story makes you feel horrified. It's nice that Ruth is not so much of a making you feel horrified, but we have to look at it and ask the questions. And if you're not interacting with the text yourself, if you're not yourself listening and think, what do I think about that? If you've just come here today to say, what does Mary think about that? Then I've failed and we've failed. It really is up to you. to work out what is this saying to me in my circumstances. And what might it be saying, as Liz was sharing, to somebody else, that we might just say, hey, do you know, had you thought it might? Did that make you think this? Could it have done? And it's appreciating the depth and the value of Scripture. So let's read Ruth chapter 2. You looked at and read chapter 1 last week. But read it with those sort of mental glasses on that are making you think, Right. Naomi's return from Moab. We know what happened there. They had the three husbands died, and Naomi and Ruth have both gone back. And I'll start at verse 22 of chapter 1. So Naomi returned from Moab, accompanied by Ruth the Moabite, her daughter-in-law, arriving in Bethlehem as the barley harvest was beginning. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabite, said to Naomi, "Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover corn behind anyone in whose eyes I find favour." And Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out and entered a field and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she found herself working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters. "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they answered. Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters, "Who does that young woman belong to?" And the overseer replied, "She's the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi. And she said, 'Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters.' She came into the field, and she's remained here from morning till now, except for a short rest in the shelter." So Boaz said to Ruth, "My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the harvesters are working and follow along after the women. I've told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you're thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled." At this she bowed down with her face to the ground. She asked him, "Why have I found such favour in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?" And Boaz replied, "I've been told all about what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, how you left your father and mother and homeland and came to live with a people you didn't know before. May the Lord repay you for all you've done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you've come to take refuge. And may I continue to find favour in your eyes, my lord," she said. "You've reassured me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I don't have the standing of one of your servants." And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, "Come here, have some bread and dip it in the wine vinegar." When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain, and she ate all she wanted and had some left over. And as she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men, "Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up and don't rebuke her." So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening, and she threshed the barley she'd gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. And she carried it back to town. And her mother-in-law saw how much she'd gathered, and Ruth also brought out and gave her what she'd had left over after she'd eaten enough. And her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." And Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she'd been working. "The name of the man I worked with today," she said, "is Boaz." "The Lord bless him," Naomi said to her daughter-in-law. "He's not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. This man is our close relative. He's one of our family guardians." Then Ruth the Moabite said, He even said to me, stay with my workers until they've finished harvesting all my corn. And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, it would be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him. In someone else's field, you might be harmed. So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and the wheat harvests were finished. And she lived with her mother-in-law. It's real, isn't it? Real people in a real situation. You can see it. You can see it happening. And that it comes across a bit like a film script. With I've called it brief encounters. But we've got this question, and we've already looked at what are we looking at for, and the question of reading stories. We've got these two women, bereaved women, uprooted women. They got on okay in Moab, as far as we can tell, until everybody died, until the sons died, really. Naomi was quite happy there. But they've come. They've had a what in those days would be a long journey. Okay, it'd be a long journey now if you had to walk. Worse if you had to go by on a donkey. You might not think so, but have you ever travelled on a donkey as opposed to having a quick ride on the beach when you were six? They've got there, tired, upset, didn't know where they were, shell-shocked, and everybody had been stirred. Everybody knew they were there, and nobody spoke to them. Well, they spoke to them just, but nobody looked after them, nobody looked out for them. And they were in that situation. And that's where we begin our chapter. And in 2 verse 1, we have this glimpse ahead, looking at the... It often happens, this, in Scripture, where you get an introduction to something apropos of nothing. Just says, oh... Just so you know, readers, Naomi had a relative called Boaz. Boaz isn't there yet. We've not seen Boaz yet. We've not introduced Boaz yet. But it's just to tell you, when he does come into the picture, you know who he is. And that happens quite a lot. Look out for it when you're reading stories where it says such and such. And you think, oh, yeah. And then 2 chapters later, it comes in. You've been ready for it, so you know that this Boaz is going to be significant, but you don't know yet why. But you know he was a relative, related to Naomi's husband. And then we move on to scene 1. Okay, Ruth and Naomi. We've got these little, I've called them brief encounters. We've got Ruth and Naomi, and then we have Boaz and his workers, and then we have Boaz and Ruth, and then we come back to Ruth and Naomi, and there are all of them kind of little, I can only think of the posh word, and that's ridiculous, little pericopes, little sections of story. And you need to look at them together, but also look at them separately. It's a bit like this changing your lenses. You move, you have to keep moving from your zoom lens to your wide angle lens to the middle one where you look at the computer with. Don't think they did that, but we need to do that because the text does that. Keep swapping over its perspective. Okay, so we start with Ruth and Naomi. And this is interesting. Ruth the Moabite, and we see how it keeps coming back to that. It's pushing to you as reader, she's a foreigner, she's a foreigner, she's a foreigner. We need to think about what it means to be a foreigner. And that's something to say to us, isn't it? But that's there. Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover corn. Okay, we read that, we move on, that's straightforward. But wait a minute, Naomi had come with her. She'd travelled all this way. I think the text comes across as if Naomi's depressed. We've already had that in chapter 1. Everything's bitter, I'm not coping. And this fact, why didn't Naomi go out to glean? We can see later on, when the baby's born, she's bright as a button, sparky as anything. But here, she can't bring herself to go out of the house, perhaps because nobody has dealt with them. She doesn't know what to do. They've no provision. Isn't it lovely that the Bible pictures and presents people who are depressed? And I think that's significant. But it's clear, isn't it, in that text when you look at it? It was Ruth who had to take the initiative. She knew she was a foreigner. But what she does is take the initiative, because if she doesn't, nothing will get done and they might starve, but take the initiative in such a way that she doesn't put Naomi down. Real challenge to me, that. And to those of us who are, come on, we need to do this or we need to do that sort of people, to do it in such a way that actually brings in the people that you're helping. And that's there. Ruth says to Naomi, "You let me." She's letting Naomi be part of it, even though Naomi isn't doing it. Isn't that lovely? Isn't it challenging? And Naomi says, "Go ahead." As if she's... you know how it is sometimes. I find when you're talking to people sometimes who don't cope with decisions, you say, even what do you want to eat at the restaurant? And they say, "Well, what are you having?" All right. And surprise, surprise, "I'll have that too." That's okay. She's not taking away Naomi's responsibility, but she's actually making sure that they do get some food. We don't know how much of a custom gleaning was. All right, it happened there, it happened in other countries. It talks in the earlier part of the law about gleaning and doing that, but there's very few references to it. And it seems clear in Boaz's field, as you read through, that Ruth was the only gleaner. All of the other people that were there were employees of Boaz, and we'll come on to that in a moment. But Ruth just goes and gets on with it. She went, she entered a field and began to glean. Doesn't tell us at this point that she asked permission first, although we learn that later on. And it just turned out, what a surprise. As it turned out, she found herself in the field belonging to Boaz. Not unexpected to us, because we've already been introduced to Boaz. But she didn't know who he was at this point. What people sometimes call God incidences. What a coincidence. She turned up in this particular field. But she went there herself first. Sometimes we sit around waiting for God to tell us what he wants us to do. And sometimes he wants us just to get on with it. And if we get it wrong, he'll tell us. Sometimes we get clear directions, but sometimes he's saying, "What do you think I want you to do? It's obvious, isn't it? You know, this needs doing. Get on and do it. And I'll sort out the background if that needs sorting out." And that's there in this chapter. It doesn't say anything about God here at that point, but as you read it, that's what you think, isn't it? This was not just a coincidence. It just happened to be Boaz's field. Well, or Boaz's section of the field. That's an interesting picture of how the thing worked. They didn't have... You know how from a plane, when you look over England, the shape of the fields and the size of the fields, if it happens to be a sunny day, are really clear. And they're much smaller than if you drive over other countries sometimes, the fields are much bigger, and sometimes that's because the estates are bigger, and sometimes it's just because the field is shared between different people. And this was Boaz's section of the field. He happened to be a relative. So, then scene two with Boaz and his workers. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters, "The Lord be with you." So, remember, the whole book started with in the time when the judges ruled. So all of this is a society which was broken. All right? A society which was corrupt right throughout Judges. Throughout, again, the people did evil. Again, the people turned away from God. Again, and this is the society that that's part of. So it's interesting to see that for Boaz, God was still real. This is just a greeting. People say that, don't they? They say, oh, yeah. Almost to the extent of when we say God goodbye, which was originally God be with you, or God bless you, nobody... How many people in Britain would know that that's what goodbye originally came from? It's just what you say. But it doesn't seem to be that with Boaz. It seems that he did have a desire to serve God and certainly brought God into his conversation. So they come in, the Lord be with you. That's his normal greeting. But it's significant that it's his normal greeting. And the workers say, and the Lord bless you. You know, these responses, the Lord be with you and also with you. You know, it is... technical, it's formulaic, but it's real. It's a bit like saying grace before meals. It can become meaningless, but it doesn't have to be, even when it's formulaic, even when it's like that. It's a good pattern to say to people when you're leaving, you know, God bless you, or whatever. And even non-Christians do that sometimes. Okay, so the boss arrives in the field, and these warm greetings are exchanged. And then, interesting, verse 5, Boaz asked the overseer, "Who's that?" Now, what does that tell us? It says Boaz noticed that there was somebody there he didn't know, which means he knew, A, everybody else were part of his workforce, and B, he knew them all. He knew that there was somebody there he hadn't seen before. Now, as you know, I am pretty hopeless at names these days. 40 years ago, I used to be able to ask people their name once and then I knew it. 30 years ago, I could ask them twice and then I knew it. 20 years, etc., etc. So now, I know you, most of you, some of you from a long time ago that are visiting, and I know most of your names. But there are some I don't, because I forget. But I know who you are, and in a way we need to be on the lookout. Boaz was on the lookout. Who's there that I don't know? Who are they? Why are they here? What are they doing? Is there something I can do for them? That seems to be the question, not, what are they doing here? How dare they? Not a hint of that. What are they doing there? What can I do for them? There's a lot in this chapter, isn't there? Even though it's just a snippet of a story. Who is it? Answer. Boaz's question is, who is it? Verses 6 to 7. She's the Moabite who came back from Moab. Keeps coming on to that. She's a foreigner. How do you treat foreigners? How should you treat foreigners? That's a pattern, a theme that Israel didn't learn very well. And it's interesting that this book brings that out as a issue. And she said, she asked permission, and she asked politely. She came with Naomi, and she's worked hard all morning. It's as if the overseer's trying to say, she did do the right thing. It's a bit like when somebody says, will you give me so-and-so's email address? And normally you don't do that. You say, I'll write to them and let them write to you. I'll give them your email address. But sometimes you think, I'm sure it'll be all right. I know this person. I know they'll want to speak to you. Tell them I said it. And then you say, oh, I did say, I thought it would be all right. And that's not a good thing to do on a regular basis. But as I say, when you know the situation and you know the people and you know the needs, sometimes you can do that. And that's what this is like. The foreman is saying, this is who she is. And Boaz... Then comes to Ruth, has a chat with Ruth. He didn't just... Who's that person? Oh, it's Ruth, the Moabite. Okay, all right, that's okay then. I know who she is now. Off he goes. He goes and talks to Ruth. She is a stranger. And he starts off calling her my daughter. Now, he would have known she was a relative once he heard who she was. And we're left with this picture, because Boaz was a great guy. But it's obvious he wasn't a noticer. You know, he wasn't the sort of person... Because he should have picked up on the fact that Naomi and Ruth had nothing and weren't there. He was one who had responsibility, and he hadn't taken that responsibility. And you've got that picture that good people... sometimes don't do stuff, not because they wouldn't if they thought of it, but they'd never thought of it. If you're a noticer, if you think things like that, if you think, surely so-and-so should do that, sometimes it's a good thing to tell them, because they don't know it by themselves. As I say, I know I'm like that. I don't notice things all the time. But as soon as it's pointed out to you, you can do it, and that's a bit like it was with Boaz. But the text is saying that. It's telling you he was a kinsman redeemer and he'd done nothing. No more than the rest of the people had done so far. So he approaches Ruth, says, okay. And then we have this health and safety speech from Boaz to Ruth in verses 8 to 9. Stay and work, don't go and glean anywhere else. Stay and work with the women who work for me. I've told the men not to harm you. Duh. I must stop saying duh. Now, I wouldn't. If you've got a stranger coming into the church, oh, come to our church. You know, I've told the people here not to be nasty to you. You shouldn't need to do that, should you? The fact that it says that, says this was a society where women were likely to be harmed as they went about their daily work, as they tried to make a living. Boaz says, stay here, and I've told the men not to harm you. Fancy having to do that. Says something. It reminds you that this was the time when the judges ruled, that this was the background of the society. And it's sensible to make provisions. Health and safety is not always stupid. Occasionally you think that's over the top, but sometimes you need to be over the top. Here that was a need. Okay, so stay and work with my people. There's something you can do. He's not saying you shouldn't need to work because I'm going to give you an allowance, give you a widow's pension or whatever because I'm a relative. He says, stay and work here. And then he says, oh, and don't let yourself get dehydrated. Make sure you go. And it's lovely, isn't it? That just little... So he's not a noticer, but he does think about things. He does have plans. He does see certain things. He is a business manager of his estate. He's obviously a wealthy person. So Ruth says, What's your motivation here? Is she saying that in a, oh, why are you helping poor me? Or is she saying it with a, what's in it for you here? What's this? Why are you doing this? We don't know. We can't hear the tone of voice. And you might hear it differently, again, according to your own circumstances. So, but Boaz's answer is basically, because of who you are and because of who God is. That's my motivation. And that's an interesting one for us to examine. What is our motivation? The people. We're caring for the people because that's who they are. And we see good in them. But also because of who God is. May God bless you and honour you for what you've done. And those two tie in together. They're not separate. We don't say, oh, well, I'm going to help you because I'm a Christian and you might become a Christian too. He said, I'm going to help you because I'm going to help you. I told you once, I think, about Justin Welby saying, it's no use saying to somebody, Jesus is the answer to all your hopes and fears, when you've never ever listened to what the hopes and fears were. It's Boaz may not have been a noticer, but he was somebody who took people seriously and who took God seriously. And that's a challenge too. So, and then he goes above and beyond. He says, come here. I've got some at home still of this toasted grain. It's really nice. We don't use it. It's a bit like in Middle Eastern countries, eat like crisps, or it's snacking all the time, and it's there. And he gave us, and dip it in the vinegar. That doesn't appeal to me, actually. So, you know, he'd take your bread and dip it in the vinegar and have the toasted grain. We might turn our nose up at the actual snacks, but for them that was wonderful. And Boaz brings her in to the community, gives hospitality. And then we have this, so Ruth, in verses 17 to 18. So Ruth gleaned until the evening. She got on with it. She got back, she threshed the crops, which means she kind of, you whip them almost, so the grain comes away from the rest, and collected four, so it was an ephah. Now an ephah is, no, it's 30, about 13 kilos, which is about 2 stone. So 2 stone of grain involves a lot of gleaning and a lot of, I think, half the weight of a suitcase. I was going to bring but I didn't get round to it, to show you that's what it was. And she took that home and the leftover lunch grains. So not only this is the food we're stocking up, because you remember the harvest only took place over a couple of weeks, less than that probably for the barley harvest, and then for the wheat harvest a bit later. And you had to keep that then over the rest of the year to feed you for the rest of the year. So it's, again, the bits that we learn about the culture and the pattern, that culture. So, and then we come back to Ruth and Naomi. Chapter 2, verses 19 to 22. She gets back and her mother-in-law says, okay, where did you glean? And she said, oh, I went in this field and there was a man named Boaz. Oh, Boaz? Oh, he's one of our kinsmen redeemers. Oh, he's shown kindness. Oh, he got this and you were able. And you see Naomi beginning to wake up at this point, beginning to respond, beginning to think, oh, it will be good to go with the women who work with him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed. Duh. Again. That sense of people being harmed was clearly a real thing in the culture. When I'm going shopping, I know that occasionally people get mugged. in various ways. I got mugged once in Barcelona. Nasty. But you don't go out all the time thinking, oh, I might get mugged. Unless you're living in a community where knife crime is happening all the time and where this is a real threat on a daily basis. Twice we've had this mention in this little passage, ordinary passage of people working in fields. You might be harmed. This is a real threat, even in a small village community like that. So Naomi says, someone must have helped. Who was it? Ruth said it was Boaz. Naomi said, he's a kind man. Actually, he's got a responsibility to help us. Ruth says, he's even more kind than you think. Naomi says, well, keep going there. Otherwise, you might be harmed. So Ruth did. And by the way, she was living with Naomi all this time. Why not? What's going on there? Don't know. So, that's it. That's chapter 2. And really, we come to the over to you. You have to go away and you have to read it again and you have to say, oh, what's this saying to me? And some of these thoughts I'll put in the study questions. But just to look at one or two of them now. What do we learn about their society? And is that pointing to action we should take in our community? What does this say to us about community responsibilities? What do we learn about the characters? Who they were, what they did, how they thought? How they're portrayed? The active person taking initiative, the depressed person being helped, the landowner, the foreman, the workers who might have harmed them. What do we learn about God in this passage? It doesn't talk much about God. We learn about God from the way that they use him to say, may God bless you, God bless you, how is this, and so on. But the God incidence is in there. And then an interesting one, I think, is who do you identify with in the story? Do you identify with, and this might vary from time to time, do you identify with Naomi? Do you identify with Ruth? Do you identify with Boaz? Do you identify with the foreman? Maybe not with any of them particularly. You've not asked the question. But if you do, it's worth swapping that over. What would I think about this passage if I identified with somebody different? How does that work? And what happens if you try and read the text as if you were one of the other characters? And it's worth doing that sometimes, reading the text through as if you were one of the characters and asking what's happening. So that's chapter 2. And we'll come back to chapter 3 next week. And the Lord bless you.